Welcome to Money, Markets and Masterminds, a CityWire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment and strategic decision making. If you're a fund selector or an independent financial advisor looking for insights, analysis and expert opinions to enhance your opinion, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruan Uester. In 1995, nearly 30 years ago, South Africa was a very different place. The country had just voted in its first democratic election. We won the Rugby World Cup for the first time, and pay TV provider DStv just launched. The Johannesburg Stock Exchange, or now just better known as the JSE for short, also looked vastly different. At the time, 600 companies were listed on the exchange, and only six of those companies in the top 40 index, Anglo American, Richemont, Standard Bank, Sasol, Netcore, which is now just Nedbank, Absa and Goldfields remain amongst the 40 largest shares in the bourse today. And with BHP's recent bid for Anglo, we don't even know how long or even if they will stick around for long. The increased number of companies delisting from the JSE has elevated investor concerns about the outlook for local equities. The shortage of new listings, the relatively weak performance of local shares, and depressed levels of business confidence have further inflamed fears among market participants. But while the delisting trend is concerning, the discussion today is less about the number of companies vanishing from the public eye and more about the level of market concentration and its impact on investment portfolios. It's for that reason I invited Sean Neertling, Head of Investments at Morningstar Investment Management South Africa, into studio today to explain in intricate detail more about what that means. Sean joined the business in July 2021 and is responsible for Morningstar's South Africa domestic and global portfolios, and he oversees the firm's entire investment capability and strategy. Sean holds undergraduate degrees in both economics and information systems, as well as postgraduate finance honors and master degrees from UCT. He completed his doctoral studies in 2023 and has a PhD in finance, specializing in asset pricing and fundamental indexation. Welcome, Sean.
Thanks, everyone, and thank you for having me on the podcast.
Sean, the listings have had minimal impact on JSE trading and the liquidity given the high levels of index concentration and the size of the main index constituents. So how meaningful is the exodus of smaller companies for the local market? And what kind of numbers are we talking about here?
Thanks, Ruan. I think that's an excellent question. I think if we look at it at the headline level, just in terms of number of companies that are listed on the exchange and the number of companies that have exited, it does seem like a fairly meaningful number. However, if we actually look at the, let's call it the economic significance of those companies, you know, approximately 70% of the listings over the last 5 years or so would be categorized as what we would see as smaller fledgling companies. With market caps of less than 300 million, that largely places them outside the investable universe of most fund managers who tend to sort of track the index. I think there are exceptions, but on average, you know, if you look at domestic equity funds holding the majority of pension fund and retirement assets in the industry, a lot of those managers have been largely unaffected by the shrinking opportunity set. So I think, you know, if you look at it at the headline level, it certainly is a trend that is worth watching and is accelerating. But I think if you look at, let's call it the economic significance in terms of the impact on the industry as a whole, at this stage, a lot less concerning than, I suppose, what has been touted in the media.
Sean, that being said, the reduction in an investment choice to South African asset managers does raise the question about the local bourse's sustainability as a capital raising platform, especially for small to mid-cap companies, doesn't it?
I think that's right, Rowan. I think there's also two parts to that. I think if you look at it from the JSE's perspective, a large part of their role is making sure that the businesses that are listed on the JSE are suitable for investment. I think, you know, in the past, it has been probably true that some of the requirements and I suppose some of the stipulations have been somewhat heavy-handed, and that's largely dissuaded a lot of new companies from potentially looking at listing, and probably led to some companies actually exiting the exchange. I think on the other hand, if you consider it from an investment perspective, you know, not all companies should be listed. I think, you know, public markets and investors are not really there to seed or incubate different companies. So it's important that, you know, the JSE play a role in making sure that that opportunity set of listed companies is populated or consists of companies that are eligible for capital. But on the other hand, also, I think from a regulatory perspective, in terms of the requirements and the rules, there's probably a bit of give and take there in terms of making sure that the main goal remains creating and unlocking shareholder value across those companies.
Sean, recent listings like We Buy Cars do unlock more value for shareholders through independent listings versus the value they offer under their holding structure, transaction capital in this case. But while this opens up avenues for money managers to direct their capital, the scope and breadth of company sectors are just not enough. Do you think there are still hidden gems? And if so, where are they hiding?
Yeah, again, I think that's a great question. I almost think we can reframe this debate just away from sort of small and mid-cap companies. I think BHP's bid for Anglo probably shows that. I think in an environment where global growth is uncertain, it's actually very hard for companies to grow organically. So we're probably looking at an environment where mergers and acquisitions or takeovers could potentially increase, particularly companies with net cash or equity that is fairly well priced could look at acquiring companies that are trading at a discount, you know, to what they're actually worth. So I think we're in an environment at this point in time, both in South Africa and globally, where we're likely to see an increase in merger and acquisition type activity. So I don't actually think the gems are hiding on the JSE anymore. You know, from a pure valuation perspective, the market is trading at levels last seen, you know, in 2008, and probably similar to the pandemic-led drawdown in 2020. So that's really why we've seen, I suppose, the level of corporate action over the last 5 to 7 years or so. A lot of these South African companies are just too cheap for savvy investors not to take notice of. And in terms of hidden gems, I think, you know, without being very specific in terms of names, I think there are a large number of family-owned companies on the JSE. And also, you know, companies with large control shareholders or shareholders of reference. And a lot of these companies, you know, would potentially be acquisition targets. So I think it's an environment where unless the value is going to be unlocked by normal demand and supply, a few of those companies could probably be delisted as well.
The growth portfolios of most local pension funds have close to 75% of their assets allocated to local and global equity, with prescription by Regulation 28 of the Pension Funds Act. With the holding of some of the larger asset managers being about 30 to 35% in offshore equities, this would mean that these managers are holding about 40 to 45% shares listed on the JSE. That is a significant concentration. What a portfolio managers to do to mitigate this risk? And looking at trends abroad, which are facing similar problems, what's happening there?
So I think that's probably one of the most topical questions that both fund managers and asset allocators have had to consider over the last 18 to 24 months. If you just consider the move in terms of Regulation 28 from 30 to 45%, it's a 50% increase, which is fairly substantial. So I think, you know, when we've looked at it, we've really considered, I suppose, across the different mandates, you know, what are the more important things to keep in mind? How you actually move offshore matters to a great extent in this part of the economic cycle. Markets are highly concentrated with narrow leadership, particularly in the U.S. market. So although those markets have continued to deliver outstanding returns in the current environment, we would probably say, for example, the U.S. is trading on what we would just say is the expensive side of fair value. We do think there's pockets of opportunities in the US, but at the same time, we find other parts of, let's say, the emerging market complex and some parts of the developed world also very attractive. So how you actually think about moving offshore, you know, to maximize that offshore exposure is particularly important. And then the other part of that is, you know, South African assets, like I mentioned, are particularly cheap. So getting the right mix of South African assets and global assets, particularly on the equity side, is going to be important. I think if you look at where the market has moved, I do think that we've observed the bulk of the managers that we look at as having flexed and moved almost fully offshore to a large extent. But on average, you know, the median is sitting at about 35 to 36% offshore. So we have seen a large number of managers moving offshore and taking advantage of that higher offshore allocation. But a lot also still showing some conservatism in terms of maintaining exposure to, I suppose, an SA equity universe that still remains cheap. In terms of capital protection, I do think that is largely mandate specific. And I do think there the entry point largely matters. I think the way that investors think about offshore exposure in low, medium, or high equity across multi-asset funds is important. And I do think that, again, that wider offshore allocation or being able to move to 45% does allow managers to be somewhat more discerning in terms of moving capital offshore.
Sean, the JSE is no longer the only licensed stock exchange in South Africa. There's the Cape Town Stock Exchange and A2X. ZARX, of course, recently had their license suspended. But have these alternative exchanges alleviated any pressure from asset managers from a concentration or liquidity perspective? And if not so, what is the incumbent doing or is already doing to open up our capital markets?
So then I think the answer to your first question would be, at this point in time, no, it hasn't really alleviated much pressure in terms of concentration and liquidity. I think it's important to keep in mind here that market integrity and stability are particularly important. A big part of trade and volumes on the JSE, for example, comes from foreign investors, which improves liquidity in that market and also price discovery. That investor sentiment, particularly on the foreign side, does tend to ebb and flow, largely around sentiment with the country. So we're actually seeing a drop-off in levels this year, and that's largely an outcome of political risk ahead of the elections. It's important to keep in mind that that's more about the country as opposed to concerns around the JSE from a foreign perspective. I think the main point is that, you know, the JSE has its challenges, but it is a credible business that the market largely trusts. And that trust does take a long time to build. So while we do think that it's net positive that we're seeing new entrants, it will take a relatively long time for those, let's say, new businesses, whether it's the Cape Town Exchange, to scale and to basically gain the credibility to attract sustained market interest.
Sean, it's perhaps no coincidence that private debt as an alternative investment class is booming just as companies delist at an ever-increasing rate. But the trade-off between the listing expense and shareholders' relentless demand for short-term returns versus the risk of private investments or the opaque nature of it, is it all worth the price of going off-market?
That's a really good question. I think private debt and potentially along with private equity does have legs as an investable asset, particularly in the context of bringing, let's call it, robustness to portfolios. It's not that highly correlated with listed assets. We are probably a few years away from implementation at scale, though. Liquidity in those markets is somewhat different to the experience most investors have had in, let's call it, unitized vehicles. So establishing, let's call it, base rates and expected returns for that low liquidity still needs work. I think if you consider, you know, taking a company or keeping a company private, it does allow management to largely focus on, you know, the sustainability of the business and steer clear from, let's call it, short-term incentives of outside investors. So I think that's true in both, debt and equity markets. Listed markets, you know, do provide a wider pool, access to a wider pool of investments, of investors, but that does come with, you know, very short-term expectations. So I think, you know, debt investors probably understand this a bit better, particularly because the term of the bond is usually set up front. But I do think that, you know, private debt does come with its own challenges where management might need to potentially just learn how to manage expectations of shareholders in a more listed space.
Sean, as a final question, index trackers and exchange-traded products were initially introduced to lighten the burden of investing directly into stocks, mainly for retail investors. But now there's almost the same number of exchange-traded products listed on the JSE than actual direct shares. Are institutions increasingly making use of the passive products to diversify their portfolios and to cut cost in a world where shares are few and far between?
So I think if we look at the direction of travel, I think if you use the US as a base case, the direction of travel is moving more towards ETFs and trackers becoming more popular. Passive is a significant part of that market, and there's an overwhelming shift from, let's call it, mutual funds towards lower cost options, which includes ETFs. I think if you look at South Africa, you know, a large part of the move, for example, in the US is predicated on market structure. I think in South Africa, the democratization of markets is probably lagging slightly, and you know, retail investors are, I suppose, less well represented. So while we do see the trend sort of moving towards passives globally, I think, you know, South Africa has been slow, I suppose, to adopt that trend. And again, that's largely related to the structure of the market, where active management still accounts for the bulk of assets under management. So we do expect that trend, like we're seeing in the US, to come to South Africa and to continue to make grounds, but it will probably be at a lower and slower pace from what we've seen in the US. And in other developed markets.
To end up this conversation, Sean, if you can just drag closer your crystal ball, what do you foresee for the JSE in the shorter to medium term? And what is in the pipeline for our incumbent stock exchange in 2024?
So I think that's a particularly challenging question. I think if I look at history and I just look at the current pressures on the JSE, I do think that they are trying to address some of the concerns with regards to feedback that they've gotten from the market in terms of making it more accessible to small and medium or mid-cap companies. They have made some developments and some announcements with regards to potentially listening to that feedback. So I do think that, you know, the JSE will look at becoming more accessible and will potentially revisit some of the regulations and the requirements, both for listing and on an ongoing basis. I do think that the JSE is likely to remain, you know, the main stock exchange in South Africa for a really long time. It does take a long time for new entrants to build that credibility and to gain market trust. But I do think if you look at the JSE, the direction of travel again has been more towards local companies or pure South African companies. If you look at index harmonization, for example, where, you know, those secondary listings or let's say offshore companies that happen to be listed on the JSE are becoming less prominent. The market is becoming a lot more SA-centric. So I do think that we'll probably see more of a shift towards local companies. But I do think we move to a structure that maintains integrity and stability. And as long as the JSE listens to market feedback, I think we remain in a market structure which allows investors to allocate capital.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. And thank you, Sean, for highlighting some of the significant stresses that keep our money managers up at night. But if there's one thing I've learned in my 20-odd years as a financial journalist, is that the end of alpha does not always equal omega. To all our CityWire South African listeners, thank you for tuning in to this episode of Money, Markets and Mastermind with me, editor Ruan Joosten. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review and share it with your network. We are available on all major platforms such as Spotify, Google and Apple Podcasts. Until next time, goodbye.